So I added in a few extra verses of the fun that we get from Mark chapter 13, because we get this amazing apocalyptic language. And I think it's natural when we hear this stuff read, when we hear these words, that our minds drift naturally towards the kind of end times, if you like, the end of days. And it's a popular theme, isn't it, in culture around us. And I've got to admit, I was trying to think of an example, thinking of a film, and I've got two young daughters. The youngest is just coming up to one, and I haven't been to the cinema for so long that I couldn't think of a good example of a film that's recently been out that's dealt with this kind of, you know, the apocalypse, those kind of themes. You'll have to kind of fill in the blanks, add your own one. That's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? You know the kind of thing. There's loads of them around. And in those kind of films, the kind of post-apocalyptic ones, we've got those ones of people trying to restart the human race after a catastrophe. But for followers of Jesus, thinking about the end of the world involves thinking about God's judgment at the end of time, which is a factor that's so often missing from those kind of films. And actually, this chapter from Mark's Gospel doesn't make it sound like something much worth looking forward to. I've always been made particularly uncomfortable by verses 16 to 19, which is why I wanted to read them out, a bit about the pregnant and nursing mothers. It's scary stuff. And if that's how God's going to act at the end of time, I'm not sure that I want to be any part of it. But at the same time, as people who know and love Jesus, our Saviour, God's judgment at the end of time should be something that we're looking forward to. Because it's the time when he puts everything right. When the things that cause us pain and sorrow and grief here and now will be taken away forever. When all those who recognize their need for Jesus to put us in the good standing in front of God that we could never achieve for ourselves, all those people released into the joy and peace of being in God's presence forever. And that's what's going to happen at the end of time. So what's Jesus speaking about in this chapter? Because these are the words of Jesus that are recorded in Mark's Gospel, verified by his earliest followers. So we can't just ignore them if they make us feel uncomfortable. We need to strive to understand them, don't we? And we do that particularly by reading around, reading the whole chapter, reading what's going on, and we get a better understanding of what Jesus was talking about with his followers. And what we discover when we look that bit closer is that Jesus wasn't talking to his followers about the end of the world, but about an event that was going to happen much sooner. So Jesus, in the beginning of these verses that I read out, was talking about an event that we know from historians actually happened. AD 70, the city of Jerusalem was sieged by the Roman army. There were horrific consequences for those trapped in the city, those left to die. And Jesus didn't want his followers, when this time came, to persevere through that time, to stick it out. But he wanted them to literally run for the hills. He wanted them to get out. And part of this brutal attack, this brutal thing that happened, as Israel's capital city was attacked, the temple was burnt down. And this was a horrible event, both because of the human consequences of what happened, but also for how the nation of Israel understood itself, because the temple was the centerpiece of Jewish life and worship. And that was all put to an end. But the kind of pain, the kind of suffering that happened through this siege of Jerusalem is exactly the sort of thing that God is going to put right, that God is going to put a stop to when he returns, when things are finally the way he wants them to be rather than the way they are now due to human rebellion and disobedience. God is not the God who inflicts things, but rather the God who's desperate for these kind of things to stop, but is waiting before he returns to give as many people as possible the chance to turn back to him, that well-known verse, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9, "The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but wanting everyone to come to repentance." And actually, as we look at these words of Jesus, there's something far more important than just whether Jesus' prophetic statement came true. Because what happened was the focal point of religious life shifted. No longer was the temple the key way to relate to God. The amazing news is that the Creator God, Israel's God, had made a way of salvation for everyone. Jesus became what the temple should have always been. So given how significant these events were, the destruction of the holy city of Jerusalem and its temple, it makes sense that Jesus used this apocalyptic language, and he reached back into Isaiah's prophecies to find the right kind of language, the kind of language that we'd also expect to read in the book of Revelation at the end of the Bible. Because if Jesus had just listed the events that were going to happen like some kind of prophetic news report, it wouldn't have done justice to the scale of the human suffering, the uprooting of that whole people group. And as with a lot of the Bible, if we just try to read it as a scientific text, just read it literally, it doesn't stand up. But instead, we want to see what it's trying to tell us. You know, we read these verses about the stars as if they were heavenly lamps falling off their fixings, falling to the ground. We know that's not how stars work, but it tells us something significant about that kind of day. If the stars are falling from the sky, it's not a science textbook. It's about how we see the world and understand the world. And that's what's amazing about the Bible, isn't it? Is that it's a book that speaks to the human condition, that gets what it's like to be a human, to know the whole spectrum of human experiences, from utter joy to total despair. So that's quite a long way of me saying that Mark 13, Jesus is mainly talking about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, now a past event. And the thing is, while I've been saying that we mustn't read this chapter as a prophecy about the end of the world, this kind of apocalyptic language quite rightly gets us thinking about the end of the world, the end of this current age. And I think that is really helpful for us tonight. And I think we need that. Because this passage, as challenging as it is, as disturbing as it is in parts, as hard to understand as it is, it's got the potential to get us thinking in a different way. It has the potential to reframe how we see things. Because this passage isn't talking about the end of the world, or certainly not the first bit. It does get onto that later in the chapter, and we get that great example from Jesus when he talks about the servants waiting for the master to return to the house. But the kind of language that Jesus uses in this chapter, in order to get across just how devastating that destruction of the temple will be, is helpful for us today, I think. Because it's not the way that we usually talk, is it? It's not the kind of conversations that we'd normally have. And I think it pushes us to think bigger and to think differently because it's uncomfortable, because it's a bit of a poke in the ribs, if you like. It encourages us to lift our heads from the things immediately in front of us, to see something of the bigger picture. And as we follow Jesus' instruction from this passage to keep watch, I wonder whether the word that some of us need here this evening is look up. I don't know if you've ever been for a walk in the countryside when it's been wet and misty and really muddy. So you've had to really watch where you're going to make sure you don't face plant in the mud. You have to watch your feet carefully to make sure that every step you take is solid so you don't slip. And you walk on for a good long while, watching each footstep before you stop and look up. And the mist has cleared away and you can finally see the view of the hills. but you hadn't realized because you were so focused on not falling over. Or maybe that experience when you go to a new supermarket that you've never been to before, or the supermarket that you always go to, but they've changed all the aisles around just to confuse you, and you've taken your shopping list, determined to get every single item on that list as quickly as possible so you can get out again and do something more interesting. So you keep your nose glued to the list, head down, focused. And what I do is, if I'm like that, I get really fixated on the list, on ticking the things off one by one, making sure I don't miss anything important. And what I find is that it takes me loads longer to do my shopping. Whereas if, instead of being fixated on the list, if when I got into the shop at the beginning, I'd taken a minute to check which aisles I needed to go down, which I could avoid, group the items, you know, which are the chilled ones, all that kind of stuff. All the stuff I'm sure most of you do all the time, and I'm just trying to get my head around. It's a much smoother experience. It makes all the difference to stop, to look up, to look at the whole list, look at the whole shop. And that's the invitation for us here this evening. Look up. Because it can be so easy to be caught totally in the immediate, the things in front of us, the people and the tasks in front of us day by day, the things we've got coming up this week, the things that we enjoy and the things that we're finding hard. And of course, it's good and right to focus on these things. God cares about them. God cares about those people. And we've got work to do. And this is one of the big tensions, isn't it? One of the big pulls in the Christian life, between looking up to what's ahead and looking down to what is in our hands, what's in front of us. But the point of Advent, of this season that so many churches across the world celebrate in the run-up to Christmas, is an opportunity, a time in the year for us to consciously choose to put our focus on the what's coming next. And it brings a balance to our year. And we've just done this great series, haven't we, this City Vision series. If you missed talks, I'd encourage you to listen back to some of the amazing guest speakers we've had about work that they've been doing, kingdom work that they're doing to see God's kingdom come here in Middlesbrough. And it's been so exciting to see that, to learn more of what it means to be a church for our town, to be a church called to be stuck into the nitty-gritty of life here in Middlesbrough. And that's completely right. But there's something, isn't there, about the balance between thinking about that practical stuff. How do we get stuck in? How do we live out the kingdom day by day? With this challenge from this passage, to look up, to think bigger, to think beyond. Because I think if we don't take those opportunities to think bigger, to think beyond, we can get stuck thinking that this is all there is. And for some people here tonight, you might be asking that vital question of, is this all there is? As in, is there anything more than what I can see and touch and experience? Is God real? And if you're asking those questions, they're great questions to be asking. It's a great thing to be exploring. I'd encourage you to continue asking those questions. Do speak to me or Eric or others if you want to keep grappling with those questions. Is this it? Is there more to life? Is there more to experience? But for those of us who found that there is more, that there is a God that knows us and loves us and has invited us into relationship with him, the challenge still stands. God's not just our comforter and our strength through the challenges of this life, although he definitely is that. But he's got a plan that is eternal, that will far outlast the things that are currently dominating our headspace. To compensate for some of my ignorance about science, I read something helpful this week by a guy called John Pilkinghorn, who's a Christian and a scientist. And what he was writing about on this passage was the point that the earth is much less permanent than it appears to us. The universe is much less permanent than it appears to us. The sun is much less permanent than it can seem. And actually, when we see things from the perspective of the universe rather than our own life. Things are far more in flux than they appear. Life is not going to continue forever. It can seem permanent and immovable, but it's not. We need to look up and see beyond it. And we contrast the natural world, the created order, with God's faithfulness, which is the thing that will never come to an end, the thing that is eternal, never ending. The steadfast love of God will endure forever. It's our source of hope and security. It's God, not death, not an ice age or our sun burning out. God will have the last word on us. God is the source and sustainer of life, not the sun. So as we enter into these weeks of Advent, as we prepare for Christmas, we enter into this time of waiting and preparing to celebrate what's already happened in the past, Jesus' birth, and all that that means for us, to know that God knows what it means to be human. And yet at the same time, we wait for something that's not yet happened, for Jesus' return, his second coming, the time when he'll come and put everything right once and for all. But in the bit of the Bible that we heard read tonight, we heard Jesus' words that we don't know when it's going to happen, do we? So we need to stay awake. We need to keep watch. And it's worth noting that keeping watch doesn't mean being fixated on the end. And that can happen quite a bit, can't it? Every so often a group makes the headlines claiming that the end of the world is just about to happen and they've worked out when. I remember that one from 2012. I don't know if there's been ones recently again that have passed me by while I've been rocking a baby to sleep. But in December 2012, it was the conclusion of the long count Mayan calendar. And so there was all that stuff, wasn't there, on the news about precautions being taken around the world in case this was the end of the world. Apparently, I read a BBC news article that said in China, there were candles being panic bought. In Russia, tinned goods and matches, the sales of those had surged. And there were even people gathering in the Pyrenees waiting for a UFO to come and collect them if it was the end of the world. So all that kicked off. But as followers of Jesus, we don't need to be afraid when people make predictions about the end of the world. And importantly as well, we shouldn't be looking to try and find out the date. Don't be tempted by those who tell you that they found some kind of code in the Bible that maps everything out. God doesn't work like that. We read in verse 32 of the chapter that not even Jesus, God the Son, a person of the Trinity, when he was speaking, knew the date and time that he was speaking about to his followers. So we definitely shouldn't think that we'll get access to something that Jesus didn't have. But the flip side of that is that we shouldn't also forget that it will happen. Friends, Jesus could return in our lifetime. He's coming back. And every year that he doesn't come back, it gets more likely that he's going to come back the next year. Let that thought cut across your plans. How about this? Have you booked a summer holiday yet for next year? Summer 2018, the adverts are on the TV tempting us to go somewhere warm and sunny while we're stuck in the grey and gloomy UK. It could be that Jesus comes back before you get the chance to go on that holiday you've booked. And if he does, you won't begrudge for a second all that money that you spent not being able to go on that package holiday to wherever you're going. Can you imagine that? Can you try and imagine that? Can you try and let that reality break in to your mind? Because if that can happen, and it can, and it will, then it changes how we live. We need to be on the lookout. We need to keep watch. But it's no good standing, looking up at the sky until Jesus returns on the clouds. There's work to do, and that's the work that the church has been doing, been in the business of, since that first generation that Mark wrote to, who lived through the time when the temple was destroyed. We keep watch, we keep going. But I imagine for most of us, we don't need to be told to stop staring up at the clouds waiting for Jesus to return. There are too many pressing concerns, aren't there? There's too many important things in front of us right now for us to spend all our time staring at the clouds. So as I finish, can I encourage us to make the effort over the next couple of weeks in the lead up to the celebrations at Christmas to choose to believe that there's more than we can see, to look up, to see that things aren't set in stone in the way that they can appear, that situations that seem intractable can change, that hope can come into seemingly hopeless situations. And ultimately, to use this time of Advent, as followers of Jesus have done for centuries, to choose to believe that Jesus is coming back, to choose to believe that his return is an even stronger reality than the things we see and touch and hear and taste day by day, to be on the lookout for when Jesus comes back. And it struck me that we're singing two songs later in the service that pick up this theme of looking up and thinking bigger. And quite soon we're going to see that song, I See the King of Glory, which often can feel slightly odd because it pulls on this kind of language, the language we don't normally use. And can I encourage you as you sing that to try and imagine it, to try and let that reality of what is definitely going to happen, is definitely going to come, break in to your mind as you sing that song that encourages us to imagine, to let the truths into our hearts and into our minds. And at the end we sing, I love that little tag in the song, Who, O Lord, Can Save Themselves, where we sing, we lift up our eyes to the giver of life. And that'll be right at the end of the service. But I'd encourage you, as you sing that, again, to take the opportunity to be thinking about lifting your eyes up to the reality that is God's reality, not the reality that we can end up having this small mindset, but the big reality of what God is up to, what God is going to do, because we can trust that is true. Amen.